Not just the United States.
Oh, no, just everywhere.
And you have spent a lifetime really working on that issue. I wonder if you could give us a bit of the history of Proposition 1.
Well, it goes back before. In 1984, I was working for the National Wildlife Federation as the assistant to the CEO, and I was writing, interviewing homeless people and writing a play about homeless people in the Reagan era. It was called The Great People, G-R-A-T-E, and it was about the fact that they were covering over the steam grates that kept homeless people warm during the wintertime. And I was going through Lafayette Park one night, and I saw a very small woman lying on the sidewalk in a ski suit. It was a cold night in March, between two very, very large signs, 8 by 12 foot signs. One of them was a mushroom cloud that said, "Revelation, this need not be our end. It's up to you." And the other one was, "Mr. President, why don't you come out with the forest homeless?" And over the top, between the two signs, was another narrow sign that said, "Doubting Thomas's Free Philosophical Forum." So I stopped to talk to this woman, who turned out to be named Concepcion Picciotto, and I asked her if she did this by herself. She said she had been there for 3 years, which I found astounding, day and night. And she said no, she had a friend. He was a philosopher. His name was Thomas. And the main character in my play was a philosopher who lived on the street and helped people. So I decided I'd come back and meet this guy. So I did the next day. And 3 weeks later, I gave everything I owned to my daughter, quit my job, joined the vigil. And 3 weeks after that, Thomas and I were married in Lafayette Park. Not Concepcion wasn't particularly happy about that, but she learned to live with it. So we built signs. I built signs. They had their signs. I built signs. And I was out there for 18 years, 15 of them day and night most of the time. And what I was there for was to abolish nuclear weapons worldwide. In the mid-1980s, we started circulating a petition asking the legislators of the United States and the U.S., then USSR, to pass constitutional amendments to abolish nuclear weapons. And it was very, very popular. And so every year I would go up on Capitol Hill and carry a larger and larger stack of the signed petitions and knock on the door of every representative's office and say, "Will you please help us introduce this into Congress?" And it never happened. But then in 1990, someone came to D.C. from the Impeach Governor Mecham campaign in Arizona. And that was when Governor Mecham refused to acknowledge the Martin Luther King holiday. And so the people got mad and got rid of him. And one of the people who was involved in that campaign came to Lafayette Park, saw our petition, said, "Well, you know, you're getting lots of signatures, but what good are they doing you? You need to do something official." So we did, and we brought a voter initiative to the people of Washington, D.C., which was opposed, hotly opposed at the last minute by the Washington Post and the Washington Times and, you know, everybody you would expect to oppose it. But it won, and it won overwhelmingly. And as a result, Eleanor Holmes Norton, our delegate in Washington, D.C., who had just started her new job, she met with us and she said, well, she wasn't going to introduce a constitutional amendment because they'd laugh at her, but she introduced a bill in 1994, which then was called the Nuclear Disarmament and Economic Conversion Act. And over the years, every session, she's reintroduced a new bill. Every time there's a little bit fine-tuning of the language, bringing it forward into talking about transforming the war economy to a clean energy economy.
Ellen Thomas, of course, who's our guest today. Ellen sat in front of the White House for 18 years as part of a vigil opposing nuclear weapons. And you were talking about H.R. 1976, a bill to provide for nuclear weapons abolition. And I wonder if you could, as you said, go through that bill and what it would actually do if it were passed.
Well, I'm going to read it to you because it's pretty short. I'm going to do a little paraphrasing, but basically it says, the United States government shall provide leadership to negotiate and enter into a multilateral treaty or other international agreement that provides for the dismantlement and elimination of all nuclear weapons in every country under strict and effective international control, and redirect resources that are being used for nuclear weapons programs, and I'd like to address that later, to shut down and clean up the nuclear weapons industries, and to convert the other arms industries into mass-producing carbon-free, nuclear-free energy systems, so that instead of continuing to sink taxpayers' dollars into the war economy, we can use that money to transform it to a clean energy economy, which will become self-sufficient. It will create many more jobs than currently exist with, for example, nuclear power or building nuclear weapons. If we change our whole energy system, and we can, you know, during World War II, they converted the automobile and the shipbuilding industries into making tanks and warships, and you know, it can't. We have to turn it around. We have to go the other direction, particularly with the situation that we have now with climate change. There are people who say that nuclear power is the answer. It's not the answer. It would take many more nuclear power plants to completely provide us with what we need. And those are continuously producing not only terribly dangerous, toxic, radioactive waste that lasts for years and hundreds of thousands of years, multi-thousands of years, some of them, different things, different periods of time. The shorter, the more lethal. But it also is producing weapons-grade uranium and plutonium. Every single nuclear power plant is emitting radioactive radioactivity into the air and the water. They admit it. And they are also producing weapons-grade plutonium and uranium. So we can't ever really feel safe about getting rid of nuclear weapons unless we get rid of the nuclear power plants. And that's going to take time. You know, we can phase them out. And while we're phasing them out, we'll be phasing in a whole new system. We've got the technology. We've got the laboratories. If the people in the labs were spending their time figuring out new and better ways to create energy from the sun and the wind and the tides, we could solve these problems. We can do it. It may, you know, there's a lot of people say, oh, it's too late. Let's just give up and live as long as we can live and still have babies. Anyway.
Well, sure. I mean, let's think not about what's defeatist. The future for them.
Yeah. Well, let's fix the problems. But we can't do it by making war, threatening to make war. And I have to go on with this. So once these businesses are making money on their own, we don't subsidize them anymore. We use the money that's currently going into nuclear weapons. We earmark that on an annual basis instead for education and health care and fixing the roads and environmental restoration, human needs, things we really need. Now, talking about money, the Obama administration, which in 2009 was saying that it wanted a world without nuclear weapons, and then in the 2010 he said, but maybe not in our lifetimes. And then he agreed as part of this, of approving the New START treaty to satisfy the industrialists who want to keep investing in research and production of new and better ways to obliterate everybody on the planet, that there would be a modernization of our nuclear weapons program over the next 30 years, which will cost $1 trillion. That's over and above maintenance and security and so forth for these existing nuclear weapons. Now, we're not supposed to be making new nuclear weapons. And what they're saying when they're designing these new nuclear weapons, the smaller ones, the bunker buster nuclear weapons, they're saying they're just a redesign of an existing weapon and they're giving it the same number. But it's not the same weapon. And it's wrong. And not only is it wrong, it's extremely dangerous. Last November, we came really close to having World War III with Russia over the Ukraine. It really was, and Syria, what's going on in Syria. It's a scary, scary time. And the United States has been staging war games outside China, outside. What is going on? It doesn't make any sense. We have to raise our voices. We have to insist that our government start thinking straight, acting right.
And you mentioned Concepcion and Thomas. Of course, Thomas passed away several years ago, and Concepcion just died this past January. And wonder if you could tell our listeners a little bit more about her and the legacy that she leaves after a lifetime of devoting herself to this cause.
Yes, I would be pleased to do so. I'd like to say that Connie, Concepcion Picciotto was the most courageous person I ever met. She wasn't always the most reasonable person, but she was the most courageous and steadfast. And she believed what she believed, and she stood for it, and she stood for it like nobody else. And I knew her in the middle of the night when she would sing with in a beautiful voice when nobody else could hear her. And I knew her in the early mornings when nobody was around and she was feeding the squirrels, and she loved children, and she, you know, she was full of love, but she was also full of anger about the way things were. She had signs for 35 years outside the White House, 35 years.
And I think that's what your movement represents, and the just being a part of the vigil is taking direct action and not just letting someone else maybe vote for the right thing or assume that just electing the right person will do it, but going out there and putting yourself on the line. I mean, it I think takes a lot of courage to sacrifice what you have in order to be out there. I mean, what gives you the courage to keep going in the struggle?
I have grandchildren, and I don't want them to live in a world with nuclear weapons. I want to solve the climate change problem because I want my great-grandchildren to feel like they have a future. I'm thinking into the seventh generation, you know, the traditional way of looking at things. And we need to clean up our water and air. We need to clean up our hearts and minds. We need to start treating each other with respect. I've noticed I've lived in all sorts of communities and families and so forth, and people just have a really hard time getting along with each other. People are quick to judge each other and quick to say bad things about each other, quick to be fearful. I was blessed with a mother and father who trained me not to be afraid. That was a great blessing for me. I think that's why I was able to do what I did, because I was fearless. Concepcion Picciotto was not fearless. She was probably the most afraid person I ever knew, and therefore she was probably the most courageous person I ever knew, because she stayed out there all by herself, day and night, for 35 years.
Well, I do want to thank you so much for being with us today. Again, I've been speaking with Ellen Thomas. She is a part of the ongoing vigil in front of the White House to end nuclear weapons and to end nuclear energy across the world. And you can find out more at their website, prop1.org. That's prop, the number one, .org. Ellen, thank you so much for being here on KBOO today.
Thank you, Jenka, for having me.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO Radio.
The 18th Annual Homelessness Marathon Broadcast, a national town hall discussion on poverty and homelessness in America.
I think it would be pretty startling for the majority of the public to know that within about two blocks from the White House itself, there are homeless people sleeping in parks.
This year, we'll be live from the streets of Washington, D.C. That's the Homelessness Marathon Broadcast, coming to you soon and heard right here on this radio station.
This station is KBOO Portland. Hear the Homelessness Marathon live beginning at 5 p.m. Wednesday, February 17th, and continuing until 6 a.m. Thursday morning.
On February 20th, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., Grassroot News will honor the memory, legacy, and life of Malcolm X. Join us for the music, the memory, and the deconstruction of Malcolm's political career, his split from the Nation of Islam, and the course of actions that led to his assassination 51 years ago on February 21st, 1965. As Ozzie Davis eulogized,
"Prince, our own black shining prince, who didn't hesitate to die because he loved us so."
Again, on February 20th, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., join us as we honor the memory, life, and legacy of Malcolm X.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.